Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Living a Richer Life, life-changing talk radio, a place where like-minded people from across the country come to listen, share, and learn from topics that deal with their health, wealth, hope, and prosperity. You can participate by sharing your comments or questions from the Richer Life blog page or chat room at www.blogtalkradio.com/richerlife or by using the phone to call in. Let's join the show.
I'm Dr. Charlotte Brandt Cobb.
And I'm Earl Cobb.
Welcome to Life Changing Talk Radio and episode number 8 of the Situations and Leadership Broadcast. As you know, this is a special broadcast series which gives all of us an opportunity to spend a few minutes to discuss and learn from a chapter of the new book, Situations and Leadership, Short Stories and Lifelong Lessons.
And the goal of this podcast series is to have an entertaining and hopefully insightful discussion about each of the 10 short stories. Now, each of the short stories are written to unpack some key lessons all of us can learn and use while addressing challenging personal and professional situations. These lessons can also strengthen our critical thinking and leadership skills. As with each of the broadcasts in this 10-part series, Charlotte and I are honored to have two guest hosts, and tonight is no exception. They both have read the book and are here tonight to share their thoughts on the story and the lessons contained in Chapter 8, titled The Trees Got Me. First, I would like to welcome to tonight's show Dr. Yvette Dubois. Yvette is a dear friend who we first met when Charlotte and I lived in Dayton, Ohio, back in the late 1990s. Dr. Dubois is currently the president of Better Godparents, LLC, and an adjunct professor at the University of Illinois Chicago College of Medicine, where she provides neuroscience and related instruction to medical and graduate students. She has a bachelor's degree in biological psychology from the University of Michigan, a master of public health from Columbia University, and a doctor of medicine degree from the University of Illinois at Chicago. Her company, Better Godparents, provides consultative services and retail outlet awareness support in the integration of the godparent experience. That is terrific. Her company also works alongside Houses of Worship to launch godparent and youth ministries. Dr. Dubois has an outstanding medical background, which includes aerospace medicine, hyperbaric medicine, public health, and surgery. Her unique medical background has provided her the opportunities to lead major collaborative advocacy, policy, and educational efforts with the Aerospace Medical Association and the American Medical Informatics Association. Yvette, it's so great to have you with us again. Welcome to Life Changing Talk Radio.
Well, Earl and Charlotte, it is great to be here. We have really been waiting for this moment. And Earl, congratulations on your new book, Situations in Leadership. The book covers topics and scenarios that are common in leadership and business, but so many are applicable to operational and communication dynamics within any group or organization. I really enjoyed discovering the book's versatility, you know, across industries, you know, from traditional corporate settings to houses of worship. So thanks for the opportunity to share, you know, our thoughts on the chapter. And thanks for inviting us to participate in a larger conversation about leadership.
Very good. Very good. Well, it's nice to have you guys here. And also, let me welcome to episode 8 of Situations and Leadership another dear friend who just happens to be Yvette's husband, Dr. Marvin Jackson. Dr. Jackson serves as a flight surgeon for the Great Lakes and Western Pacific Aerospace Medicine Office of the U.S. Federal Aviation Administration. In his role, he is tasked with addressing airmen and air traffic controller aeromedical issues with expertise in diseases of the central nervous system. Dr. Jackson contributes to both policy and practice to promote health and safety in air and space operations. He created, and it was interesting to hear this, he created the first and was first to lead the FAA's virtual hiring process back in 2014. The process is a contingency for unanticipated service interruptions and foreshadowing events like a pandemic. You can see why I got excited there. How timely, Marvin. In 2014, he was recognized as the Flight Surgeon of the Year. Just like his wife, Marvin is also an adjunct professor at the University of Illinois Chicago College of Medicine. He has a master's degree in aerospace medicine from Wright State University and a graduate of George Washington School of Medicine and Health Services. Marvin, welcome to Life Changing Talk Radio.
Thank you. It's been great to be a part of this experience, and thank you for the opportunity to speak with you and your followers and give the perspective of someone who has worked in government and academia. So let's get into it.
Very good, very good. Now, I hope everyone out there in our listening audience has also read the story in Chapter 8 and are ready to help us unpack some of the lessons it contains. And I have found over time that these are lessons that anyone, Dr. Voy and Marvin were saying, that anyone can grasp the leadership and critical thinking skills from.
Absolutely. And Earl, I too want to welcome our dear friends Yvette and Marvin to the show tonight. Thank you all for joining us. And before we start the discussion, we will first take a short break and then play a recorded synopsis of the story from Chapter 8 titled, The Trees Got Me. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Living a Richer Life, Life-Changing Talk Radio, where like-minded people come to listen, share, and learn. The phone lines are now open. If you wish to join us on the air, you can call 516-418-5769. Again, that's 516-418-5769. Or you can join us on our blog page at blogtalkradio.com/richerlife, email us at info@richerlifellc.com, or tweet us at richerlifetalk. Now here's a synopsis of tonight's story and situation.
The trees got me. Larry finds himself sitting in his home office updating his resume. He had recently lost his job as a lead supervisor at Miracle Mile Aerospace. 6 months earlier, he was on a roll doing what he thought was being asked of him as a responsible department leader. The successful implementation of the new SAMP initiative within his department would have most likely earned him a promotion and a much-needed salary increase. However, today, as Larry painfully reflects upon how he landed in this dreadful situation, he now clearly sees what he did and what he didn't do. He is now constantly reminded of a factor that is critical to the establishment of department-level goals, strategies, and tactics within any organization. It is a factor that should never be ignored. He is also reminded that the consequences of leaders winning the wrong battles internally can be devastating for themselves and their organizations.
Welcome back. Let me remind our callers that if you would like to share your thoughts on the situation found in Chapter 8, or have any comments, please push 1 on your phone. That way we can recognize you, bring you into our screen room, and then bring you into the live discussion. You can also engage with us via our chat room, on our blog page, email us at info@richerlifellc.com, or tweet us at Richer Life Talk. Now, Earl will lead our guest panel in a review of the story contained in Chapter 8 of Situations in Leadership and respond to as many of the questions at the end of the chapter as possible, as well as any questions and comments we get from you, our listening audience.
Thanks, Charlotte. Now, you've heard the synopsis of tonight's story. The main character, a guy named Larry Dean, finds himself reflecting upon the situations which led to him losing his position as the lead supervisor at a company named Miracle Mile Aerospace. Now, let's begin our discussion tonight by asking both Yvette and Marvin to respond to this question. How would you describe Larry Dean's situation based on what you read in the story? Yvette, you first.
You know, Larry Dean has many challenges in the scenario, but the most striking for me was siloed communication. His leadership style in completing this task placed his team on somewhat of a communication island, if you will. He didn't engage in clarifying performance directives from his senior managers. He didn't gather information about the impact of these new optional safety features from stakeholders. Those would be the pilots and the airlines. And he didn't discuss with other departments that were contributing to the phase rollout earlier on the timeline, you know, their decision-making strategies that led them towards success. You know, there are many academic books written by esteemed aviation management professionals like John Winsveen and the like that examine the impact of silo communication within aviation and aerospace organizations, and most importantly, its potential to contribute to safety. You know, for me, the scenario was echoing a very real challenge in the industry. But given my experiences, you know, over the years within other industries like medicine or informatics or education, you know, I understand the ways that siloed communication can threaten the goals of any organization.
Very good. A lot of good points there. I'm sure we're going to get back to some of those. Marvin, your thoughts on Larry Dean's situation?
I'm going to follow on to what you talked about, and that is, Mr. Dean didn't know where his organization wanted to go. He missed opportunities to read the necessary reports and resources that came from other departments that had already completed their tasking for the phase rollout. Also, I think he became distracted by what I call bright, shiny objects. By that, I mean his potential for promotion, enhanced salary, increased revenue for the organization and his department. So in short, I think he lost sight of his team and the organization's overall mission.
Very good. Yeah, I noted several things there that we're going to get back to here. You know, for those of you who've read the story in Chapter 8, you know that the narrative opens with Larry Dean Googling the words goal, strategy, and tactics, and vowing to make sure that he keeps a firm grip, as he says, on the fundamentals next time. So I'm sure that most of you have gotten, even those that haven't gotten to the story yet, that from the title, The Trees Got Me, that Larry most likely finds himself in a situation of being fired and looking for a new job, because at his level as a supervisor, he failed to keep what I call a proper focus on the company or the organization's top-level goals and strategy. Now, when I say top-level goals and strategy, I mean they're the very reason the company exists, or the very reason the company organization exists, and it's the mission statement, and it's those things that you hear or that you read in a lot of the company financials or the statements. Now, unfortunately, I've learned throughout my career, okay, that sometimes you get so busy with the task at hand, with the department at hand, with what's going on today with your local organization or your local department or affiliate, that you miss some important things that will help you with not only your job but your career by thinking through why is Ford doing this, or why is this organization doing this, or why is, you know, Google doing this. There's reasons at the top level, and those things, believe it or not, eventually filter down, and those are the things that can make a difference. That is what Larry found out. Now, as a leader, if you're not at the very top, you know, CEO or whatever, then everything that goes on at your level of the organization should always consider an overarching or the corporate goals and strategy. However, sometimes it's difficult. Okay, and I'm sure when we start talking about the point that Yvette brought up, the communication silos, it's difficult to understand and sometimes to even feel that it's your responsibility to stay current, and it's your responsibility to understand what the goals and strategies mean and how that could affect your project or what you're doing. Now, I wonder how many leaders that's listening tonight or will listen to this podcast in a supervisory or middle management kind of role would feel that it's their responsibility, or do would they believe that it's the responsibility of the company to keep them informed and to remind them when they're giving a task to make sure that this fits within our overall strategy and goals. Now, Marvin, based on your experience, do you feel that most leaders at this level feel that it's their responsibility, or do they feel that it's the organization's responsibility to remind them and to keep them current?
I think most middle managers realize that they're in a schizophrenic situation. They have teams below them, and they have supervisory and C-suite level people above them. So they find themselves having to serve two masters. So it's probably one of the more challenging positions in any organization to be in that middle position. You have to support your team, you have to help educate your team, and you have to do that and create buy-in for your team members so that they can feel included, involved in executing the directives that come from those C-suite members. So there's, and we'll talk about this later on, that middle manager position is a very difficult one because you are taking fire, if you want to put it that way, from two different directions, and you have to give fire in two different directions.
That's a very good way to think about it. You know, the thing that came to mind when you were speaking is some of the things that the national airlines are going through now in this post-COVID situation, you know, where, you know, I won't call any names, but all the airlines, you know, they have the slogans about the sky, and it's about to satisfy the customer, and it's to provide service, you know, all of those things that resonates around their brand, right? But if you're the supervisor of the staff that's trying to get this plane from Atlanta to Phoenix, and like we've seen over and over in the last few months here, all of a sudden you can't even get people to put their seatbelt on without them arguing at you or punching you in the face. I mean, you're talking about ultimately being in the middle of trying to make sure that the company's brand and the goals and things are filled, but at the same time, now you've got to make real-time decisions. Now, that's a very transparent case, but in many cases, even, you know, in other organizations, it's not necessarily something that's as clear as that because you see it on TV at night now, but you find those situations where you're trying to withhold and meet those goals, that is, but for some reason it becomes difficult, as you said, that pressure coming from both ways. Yvette, your thought on that in terms of being in the middle and what's your responsibility versus the corporate people reminding you, make sure you fit this in this project, okay?
You know, I think there's responsibility on both sides, particularly when the organizations get larger, more chaotic, when they are attempting to do a lot of things in terms of, you know, building revenue, engaging new markets. You know, I think that both sides, the upline and the downline, has a role to play in making sure that those that communication is clear, that everyone understands the performance metrics that are being used to evaluate them. I think there's a role on both sides.
Very good, very good. Now, I thought in reading through the story again earlier today that, you know, maybe instead of focusing on what Larry did in the story, you know, like winning the war and losing the battle with his own team, it might be better for the time we have tonight as far as unpacking some key lessons is maybe to focus on the things in the story that he said he didn't do. Because I think a lot of our listening audience will sort of resonate to, he didn't do that. And I think with those, we're going to come back and probably link up again with things like being in silos and things like having fire come from both up and below you. So first, let's take a look at what Larry said. First, he said, I didn't realize that my role as a lead supervisor required me to make sure that I clearly understood my company's top-level strategies. Okay. Now, Marvin, we sort of hit on this, but based on the story, and you hit on some of this in your discussion of the situation, how did Larry fail to do this? I mean, he made a series of steps there. You can just see that he was working his way down a dark hole.
I think the overall thing that the fundamental thing that Larry, as a leader in executing his skills, I think one of the things he missed was the ability to be adaptable. Once in the story, he was presented with the concerns of his team regarding the training and safety implications for the stakeholders. Those stakeholders being the airline customers and the pilots. That was an opportunity for Larry to adapt and pivot, to integrate new information into the process, ensure safety, new options for features for the sales structure. And he could not complete that transition. And again, I get back to this middle manager position that is very challenging. Because of your mediating role up and down, it was an opportunity for him to serve as a conduit between the stakeholders, his team, and C-suite management. And again, he was not flexible, adaptable enough to make everyone aware of the issues and to lead to solutions of those issues.
All right. Now, an interesting thing, and again, for some of you who may not have gotten to Chapter 8 yet in the book, is that the project that Larry was being asked to roll out in his department was not the first department that rolled the project out. Okay. There were several, I remember, at least two or three departments that had rolled it out successfully and not only had implemented the idea, but also had contributed, of course, to the company's profitability, you know, that year, okay? So Larry had the opportunity to go back and you know, go talk to these guys, his peers, if you will, and get a sense of what it takes. It looks like to me, Yvette, that his focus got so narrow on the profit piece, and believing that he and his team had an opportunity to sort of do the same thing in their department as the others did, but he didn't take the time to understand how his department was different than the others. You want to talk about that just a little?
Yeah, I think that, you know, the answer to, you know, why he got so narrow in focus, it resides in whether or not, whether you attribute his, you know, narrow operational issues to him exclusively, that's a person approach, as opposed to examining his actions within the milieu of his business environment. That's a systems approach. In this particular industry, aviation, you know, errors in judgment, decision-making, operational tasks, these are often examined using a systems approach. And, you know, assessing the system doesn't mean neglecting individual choices and their contribution to errors. But it affords you a real valuable opportunity to identify and restructure, you know, the factors and influences contributing to the decisions and actions leading to, you know, an error or a mistake. In Larry's case, he was experiencing the pressures within his company to stick to the timeline because of its impact on, you know, financial gains for him and his company. Additionally, he was experiencing that pressure in a company environment that had not provided some sort of clear voice and platform for safety and related training issues to really float to the top of discussion. You know, when his team raised these issues about their process, he shut them down really quickly. And there weren't really avenues within the company for someone on those lower ends of management to come to the seniors and say, hey, there's something going on here. And if that had happened, maybe it could have derailed those mishaps from occurring.
Right.
Inherent features, you know, like of the environment, like communication styles and practices, the degree of flexibility in the timelines for your deliverables, they contribute to decision-making and task prioritization. You know, in taking a systems approach to examining Larry's actions, you know, Miracle Mile has this opportunity to identify and modify these factors so that the next manager that comes in, you know, will experience a system more conducive to his best efforts for bringing training and safety issues really to the forefront.
Right, right. And this idea of winning the battles, right? You and Marvin said he kept bringing things up to him, and he was more focused on the schedule to the point to where he was just going to win. I mean, he was going to shut them down. He was going to tell them they weren't going to do that. It seemed like to me he didn't even acknowledge that that may be a consideration we'll look at later, or he just put his head down and ran right into it. And an interesting thing, Marvin, for you is you remember he said that in his meeting with his senior management, he didn't have the courage to ask some important questions, and that was the point. That was the time, right, where he could say, "Excuse me, I know this is an important project and it needs to be rolled out, and it'd be nice if it was done by the end of the year, but we are in the software that's really focused on pilot safety. So our stuff isn't like we can just reduce the cost or turn some physical part of the plane into a requirement. There are things that has to be there. I can't just make that optional." But he never stood up and said that. Now, the story didn't say why he didn't have the courage, but why people in the middle, and I'm sure people in the top two, but since we're sort of talking about the supervisor level, what are the things that lead to someone not feeling comfortable with challenging decisions by senior management?
Well, let me start with this, that as a manager, it's your personal responsibility to be a robust contributor to the system goals. Decisions to avoid errors are not always the same as those for promoting safety. Promoting safety is a proactive sport. You're on offense. You're designing plays. You're anticipating the defense. You're creating winning strategies. And it takes more insight than I think Mr. Dean was executing at that particular time. And I think if you look at other systems and how they use system analysis, you can get a sense of why he was not comfortable. And so just really go through this very quickly. Think of James mm-hmm. Reason's framework when you talk about laying four levels of failure. The system approach has been used by industries like nuclear power, aviation, and healthcare. In the case of healthcare, it's an attempt to move away from the person-centric driver to a system-centric approach to safety and productivity. So when you look at these levels, it now gives you a framework to have these mm-hmm. kinds of conversations. Organizational influences. What's the culture of your organization is at the top. In this case, it was top-down, one-way communication. The priority messaging was not always about safety. The next level in Reason's framework is unsafe supervision. In this case, as you've already talked about, the communication that Mr. Dean had was with those on his level, lateral positions, but there doesn't seem to have been engagement with senior leadership, C-suite people. He was given those reports, and he didn't read them, unfortunately. There was no evidence of interactions with senior staff. There were preconditions for these unsafe acts, things baked into the process and procedures. One of those being meeting this artificial timeline of the fiscal year, unclear understanding about the applications of these safety options, and not being able to anticipate the impact on pilot performance that, and ultimately had the actual unsafe act. And that was, in the case of Mr. Dean, was a latent error, not gathering that information and then not having that information on hand to have these difficult discussions about modifying the package, modifying the timelines with senior management. And when we talk about these organizations and this culture structure, one of the key components of it is to be honest and forthright and to be able to have these conversations without reprisal. So yeah. We don't get any sense of that happening here, but for example, in medicine, one of the things you do is you have morbidity and mortality. It is a closed opportunity to have this discussion and to learn from that discussion. So though being able to have that discussion without reprisals is core to having a safety management system.
Right. Right. And an interesting thing, being an engineer myself, if we were to flip this around, right, it's almost like the organization failed Larry, because if there had been a system in place to make sure that there's always not just one person making these kinds of decisions, that it's put into a system, it's evaluated by peers. And I say that because there may be people that find themselves in this type of situation in many, many, many other jobs, but particularly, as companies are working more virtually, giving more responsibility to project, managers and leaders, and requiring outside consultants and Scrum and different types of people leading the organization. The more of that you have, the further you get away, from the overarching goal and really why you're doing what you're doing. One last point, because I thought this was a good point that Larry mentioned. He actually admitted it. He said that his level of emotional intelligence needed at the time to lead his team, he did not have that effective level. And, of course, emotional intelligence, we're talking about, some people call it EQ or quotient, is the ability to understand, use, and manage your own emotions, in a positive way. Last question for here and for you, Yvette. How important have you found, you know, in your career and things that you've been able to achieve, and you've achieved many of those, where emotional intelligence played an important role?
Well, as a doctor, caring for patients, in a lab, solving challenging problems in teams, where you have to keep morale up and keep people focused, where you're dealing with students in education, you're responsible for building knowledge with them, assisting them in building knowledge, but also, giving them the tools to work out in the field in whatever area they're planning to go into, to analyzing data in informatics. Your emotional intelligence is important in all those sectors. He talked about, not having courage. He talked about Larry, I'm referring to. He talked about, not having courage. But it's really important because you may be the only one or the only department in this scenario able to communicate and influence thinking and decision-making that contributes to a distinctly essential perspective integral to your organization's central core goals. Sometimes in an organization's efforts to do all they want to do, especially in challenging economics like, let's say a pandemic, the elements supporting your rudder just get lost. The direction just gets lost. Despite your organization's cultural environment or hierarchical structure, those are just examples. You have to find ways to get your risk mitigating and problem solving thoughts and solutions and ideas across the desk of those managing the rudder in your organization.
Very good. I just noticed that we're coming close to the end of our time tonight, but I did want both you, Yvette, and Marvin to sort of leave a final thought with the audience that they can walk away with. Certainly the idea of not winning all the battles and losing the war, and the idea of not keeping focus and being caught by the trees. But I think in general, this message is one that people could think of is relevance in any profession or even in life. So I'm going to let you start, Marvin, a couple of minutes on your final thoughts.
Well, you stole my thunder earlier. midway through in our examination of this, and you've already spoken to it, you can view this scenario as a personal failure by Mr. Dean. When you first read it, that may be the takeaway that you come to, that he didn't effectively execute managerial judgment and communication to meet the organization's revenue and safety goals. But I think with a little time, a little introspection, and maybe a little research and homework, you can look at this as part of a larger systemic issue with opportunities for improvement for him at the personal level, for him at the team level, for him within the organizational structure. This was an opportunity for him to perform, and he missed that opportunity to be supportive to his teammates as individuals, to help promote the goals of the team. And unfortunately, he didn't also... There was no mention in the story about him seeking out those who could be of assistance in making all of these middle manager decisions and making it smoother for himself. There's no talk of a mentor, no talk of C-suite, communications on a regular basis. Don't talk of a systematic way of moving through this plan that didn't revolve around revenue generation. So,
excellent point. Yvette?
I think that people often forget that leading can be lonely. You know, part of being a leader is looking to your right and left and seeing no one on your flank. You know, you're guiding an organization through really unfamiliar territory, and you're alone. You know, in challenging situations as a leader, you know, the details of the deliverables and timelines, you know, from your senior management, you know, maybe even, you know, rate-limiting resources, you know, those types of influences can add pressure to your decisions and contribute to decisions that deprioritize the authentic reason that you were placed in that position. You know, you're a leader because you have a unique skill set and perspective, and you have to bring those experiences, those critical thinking strategies, your subject matter expertise to the forefront when your organization is working collectively to move towards a goal. I think Larry got caught in those time pressures and distracted by what Dr. Jackson calls the shiny objects. I love that. You know, his promotion and revenue and all the tinsel and lights. And that resulted, you know, like in him ending up in the trees. And I think it's an easy error to make when there's pressure. You know, nobody wants to be that cog that slows a process down or maybe even halts a process that's, you know, meaningful to an organization, you know, moving toward a goal. Courage isn't optional for leaders. It is not optional for leaders. And ensuring that, you know, the decisions contribute, you know, to the overriding objectives of the organization, you know, it's necessary. It's protective for you. And it's fruitful.
Very good. Very good. You know, unfortunately, those will have to be the last words tonight. We're totally out of time. So let me thank Dr. Voice and Dr. Jackson for lending their insight and wisdom tonight. And Charlotte, I'm going to turn it back over to you for the close.
Oh, very good. Let's remember and thank you, Yvette and Marvin, for tonight's show and for joining us. Remember, our next episode of the 10-part Situations and Leadership series will be broadcast live Thursday night, July 8th at 8 p.m. right here at blogtalkradio.com/richerlife. Please make sure you mark your calendar and join us for episode number 9 as we explore chapter 9 of the book Situations and Leadership and discuss how Charlie Yang got himself in a situation where he had to regain his organization's trust to keep his job and later realize that he just needed to be like Mike. Now, if you haven't done so, please get a copy of the book and read along with us.
And also, click the red follow button on the left of our broadcast page. It'll let you know when the next broadcast is about to start and helps to keep us on the air.
Thanks again for joining us. Be safe and remember to live your richest life.
You've been listening to Living a Richer Life with Earl and Dr. Charlotte Grant Cobb. Thank you for joining us this evening, and we'll look forward to having you back again at the same time next Thursday.